Okay, so we're really literally going to begin a brand new sugya. It's not really a Maseches Sukkah sugya. I mean, some of the sugyas we've been learning have also not been Maseches Sukkah, but this is really not a Maseches Sukkah sugya, but it appears in Maseches Sukkah. It has nothing to do with Sukkah, and it has nothing to do with Dalam Minim. Even in Chazal itself, it kind of came in tangentially, but it is a fascinating sugya, and it's really hard to to turn up the opportunity to discuss it a little bit, and it's very, very much potentially relevant halacha lemaisa. And it's also related to Yom Diyom a little bit. It's relevant for these this time of year. So we're going to begin the sugya with the Mishnah in Maseches Sukkah. So we're going to skip a little bit. The Mishnah is on Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah begins very much talking about lulav. That's not what we're going to focus on tonight. So the Mishnah begins in Daf Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, in the middle of the page. Barishonai lulav nito b'mikdash shiva u'b'medina yom echad. That originally lulav was only taken outside the Beis Hamikdash for one day. We know the mitzvah deraisa l'kachta mechem b'yom harishon, and it was only taken the entire week of Sukkot in the Beis Hamikdash itself. It's machlokes Rashi and Rambam, where the mikdash means lulav, the Beis Hamikdash, and mikdash even means perhaps halachik Yerushalayim. But lemaisa, outside of whatever the borders, what you think mikdash means, there was no mitzvah whatsoever. Not minatar, not midirabana. Nobody took a lulav more than one day outside the mikdash. Yishachar beis hamikdash, when the beis mikdash was destroyed, hiski Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai shei lulav nikdal b'medina shiva zeich lemikdash. Yechem and Zakkai made a takona that we want to keep the beis hamikdash alive in our hearts, and therefore he made a takona that we should shake a lulav the entire week as zeich lemikdash. We spoke a lot about this early on in the perek, about some of the similarities and differences between the mitzvah of lulav kol shiva min haTorah and the mitzvah of lulav kol shiva min derabanan, and all the psulim carry over, which psulim do, which psulim don't. There's a lot of Torahs that was really made up the early sugyas back in the lulav agrozo back almost close to 2 years ago. But it's the next couple of words of the Mishnah that's going to set us stage for tonight's sugya. V'shehei yom haneif kulo asur. Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai made a second takana, and you almost get the impression that was made pretty much at the same time, right after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai made a takana, a very, very technical, almost, I don't want to say insignificant, trivial, but in terms of the impact that it has in our lives, even in the days of Rabbi Yechem and Zakkai, it was very, very little. Yom Hanev Kulawasa. What's made? What is the Yom Hanev Kulawasa? It's referring to the mitzvah Akrabas HaOmer. Of course, the mitzvah Bal Leim L'Toyva, in a couple of weeks, Meir Bona Mikdash, will be Zvechen, bring the Korban HaOmer. So that's called the Yom Hanef, because the Omer is Omer HaTnufa, you shake the Omer. Yom Hanef refers to the day, the first day of Chol HaMoed, Pesach, there it's Shrov, Tezai, and Nisan. That's the Yom Hanef, the Yom Akrabas HaOmer. Rabbi Yehud Zakkai made a takona that one is not permitted to eat the new grain, because we call Chodosh, until the end of the Yom Hanef, until the Yom Hanef is over, until the night following Tezai and Nisan. That was a takon that was made in the days of Yechem and Zakkai. What does that mean? What was the din before that? So the Gemara explains to us, the din before that was as follows. We know there's a prohibition called Chodosh, to eat new grain. Any grain, this year's grain, is prohibited in the Torah to be eaten until the day of Akrabas HaOmer comes. What exactly has to happen in order to be mat of the Issa Chodosh? The Torah says explicitly, the lechem, the koli, the charmel, lo sochu, and etzeim yamazeh, ad haviyachem is korban olakechem. That the hakrovis ha'oimer, the offering of the korban olakechem, is the matr Issa Chodosh. So min ha'Torah, if you eat grain, the new grain, in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning on Tezayin, Nisa, that's an Issa derai sechem alkas. If you eat it, a second after the korban olakechem is brought, it's mutlachet chila. So midaraisa, there's no question what the matter is. But the moment of truth is that korban olakechem out of yachem is korban olakechem. However, what's less clear is what's the din shelo bizman hamikdash. So the assumption is, of course, chadash applies. That there's no reason at all to believe that the prohibition of eating new grain doesn't exist when there's no bizman hamikdash. It wasn't even on anyone's radar screen. So of course, there's an issa derais of chadash. The question is, what's the moment of truth that's matter it? So here the Gemara says, focuses on the other half of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'lechem v'kolei v'charmel osochal etzem hayam azeh ad haviyachem is kovid olakechem." So Toshma explains to us that ad haviyachem is kovid olakechem. That refers to bizman when there's a mikdash, when there's an oimer, and when there's no mikdash, then the first half of the pasuk at etzem hayam azeh. So until the day itself comes. So the etzem hayam azeh is the matir sechodesh. So that's a further machlokes of Tanoim. What does etzem hayom hazeh mean? Does the day itself mean the beginning of the day? Or does the etzem hayom hazeh mean the end of the day? Enough community for a few hours. So okay, bizman hamikdash, if you eat chadash in the afternoon, that's perfectly okay. That's fine, because the korban was already brought in the morning. Bizman hachorban, are you permitted min haTorah to eat chadash? So it's unclear whether the tchilas hayom is the matir or the sof hayom is the matir. So the simple pshat in the Mishnah, again, the Gemara is going to work through and possibly repackage this Mishnah a little bit, but the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that min haTorah, the Isra of Chadash ends in the morning, midaraisa, what's called Heir Mizrach. Once it starts to get light, Heir Mizrach is matir. That's called Etzem Heir Mizrach. Midarabonon, Rabbi Yechim and Zaka made a takona not to eat Chadash the entire day. What? What's wrong with the din deraisa? So the Gemara explains that Yechim and Zaka was afraid that if people are going to get into the habit of eating Chadash early in the morning on Tez Zayin Nisan, they're not going to realize that next year, Heir Yibon HaMikdash, so next year there's going to be a Beis HaMikdash, and when the Beis HaMikdash is built, and if you eat for breakfast your Chadash before the Korban Omer was brought, that's an Issur Deraisa. Because there's not a Mikdash, Heir Mizrach is not a matter. You need the Korban Omer to be matter, out of Yachim is Korban Lokechem. So there's going to be a little bit of a discrepancy in people's minds. Hey, wait a second. When does the Issur Chadash end? Last year, in the old days, when there was no Beis HaMikdash, so we used to eat for breakfast the new grain, which was perfectly okay in our Torah, because Heir Mizrach is matir. But next year is going to be a Beis HaMikdash, and people aren't going to chop. They're going to make a mistake, and they're going to end up eating for breakfast, and they're not going to realize that now that there's a Beis HaMikdash, we have to wait a few extra hours till the Korban Omer is brought. So to avoid any such confusion, Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh made a takana yom hanef kulo asar. That to insist that everybody realizes Bisman Hazem Midrabanan, he threw it another couple of hours, another 12 hours of Chodesh is thrown at you. Min haTorah Heir Mizrach is matir, and then you have to wait Midrabanan till the end of the day. That's the simple pshat. Again, the Gemara has a little bit of a different reading on the Mishnah afterwards, but for our purposes, that's the simple type, the simplest pshat in the Mishnah. Right. So it's interesting that Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh made both of these takonas at the same time, and they're almost like Lishitoso in the sense of Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh, from a hashkafic point of view, was definitely trying to keep the Beis HaMikdash alive in people's hearts. Because Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh, we know, he was the famous Tana who negotiated for Yavne and obtained the Yavne Chachameh. He's the one who saw the Beis HaMikdash go up in flames. And when he saw the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, he realized there are two things. Number one, we have to support Torah, we have to build yeshivas, we have to build Yavne and the Beis, we have to keep the Chacham, keep the Besar alive. We cannot take that defeatist attitude that if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, so then the whole thing's done, the whole religion's over, that would be a terrible, terrible tragedy. So we have to go back to building Torah, you know, for Mikdash, so that we have to put all our focus, all our emphasis on Torah. On the other hand, Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh didn't want to do it at the expense of Heir Yibon HaMikdash. He wanted to also drive home the point that even though we're building yeshivas and we're building shuls and we're building kollelim and everyone's learning and saying shura, but this is not where we belong, Heir Yibon HaMikdash. So he instituted two takonas, one on Sukkot time and one on Pesach time. Well, the Sukkot takana emphasizes that you have to behave the Zeichel Mikdash. You have to remember the Beis HaMikdash, and on the Pesach time is behave upon a Mikdash. That the Mikdash is not just a thing of the past, but it's not behave upon a Mikdash, and we have to act today in a way lest we violate an Issa K'shei upon a Mikdash. That was the part of the legacy of Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh. It's interesting that at the same time Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh focused on the building of yeshivas and building Yavne and strengthening Torah, simultaneously, he had an eye to the future, Behavi Yibon HaMikdash. He actually got this model from none other than Yaakov Avinu. Chazal say that when Yaakov Avinu went down to Mitzrayim, so that was the beginning of Golos, that was the first real Golos of the Jewish people. So Chazal tell us that there were two things that Yaakov Avinu did and when he went down to Mitzrayim. One is, he set Yehuda Lefanov, Lehoros Lefanov Gershna, to set up the Sakla Beis Arot, to set up the Yeshiva, set up the Mokom Shetetzer Rol Yisrael, because he understood that the Jewish people needs a makom of limud haTorah in order to keep them going, keep them alive and goers. And he also schlepped down with him atishitim. He schlepped down the cedar wood. Why? Because in a couple of hundred years from now, his great-great-grandchildren are going to leave Mitzrayim, they're going to build a mishkan. So he already had an eye in the future. This has always been the Jewish model of goers, that you can't take the attitude that, yeah, we're going to build the yeshivas and shuls, we're going to do everything here and forget about the Beis HaMikdash. That's impossible. On the other hand, you can't take that very, very, you know, that almost like defeatist attitude that, well, we're only here temporarily anyway. You know, Mashiach's right around the corner, so why build the yeshiva? Why build the shul? Why build the yeshiva? Why build the base medrash? That's also, both of those approaches are equally incorrect. So Rabbi Yechim ben Zakeh taught us two very, very important lessons. I'm sorry, Henry, you had a...
The Omer, could that be brought like the Korban Pesach with Bnei Yisrael being Tameh? Or
if it's Tameh, it's a carbon to Tziva Shekvol Lezman. It's a carbon Tziva that has a set time to it. It would be Deicha, it's Deicha, it's Deicha Tum as well. Yes, that would
so,
be true.
So is there Machlokas whether we should bring Omer even today, even though there's Tuma? And
well, the problem is we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. It's part of our old problem about why aren't we offering the carbon Tameh, why aren't we offering the carbon Musa, why aren't we offering the carbon Pesach? So whenever we figure out the answer to those questions, then we'll figure out why we're not offering the carbon Omer. So what I want to try to speak a little bit about tonight, we may spill into perhaps next week as well, is the background to this whole discussion and really the relevance, or according to many, lack thereof, Bizman Hazeh, and that is, does this sugya speak to us b'chlo? Here we're talking about the intricacies of a din de rabbanan, of schlepping out a few extra hours, you know, hang in there. You haven't eaten chadash in 6 months and 8 months, hang in there for a couple of more hours, but the rabbanan, wait a second. What about the 8 months before that? Was anybody observing this in the first place? So how does this play out, this prohibition of chadash, of new grain? Does it or does it not speak to us bizman hazeh? So we'll use this a little bit almost like a springboard to discuss a very, very potentially loaded topic of ochla maisa. Depending on what conclusion you come out, it can significantly alter what your food intake, your calorie intake is going to be for the last 6 to 8 months. So let's see if we can analyze the sugya properly and try to understand the two sides of the coin. Try to understand why, as we're well aware of the fact that many, many people, perhaps most people, are not, quote unquote, makbid on the prohibitions of chadash. And there are many people who are makbid on the prohibitions of chadash. Let's try to give equal time, equal footing to try to get a little bit of understanding what's going on. So again, Rabbi Yechman Zakkai is assuming that there's an issue of chadash. He's assuming that we have to deal with chadash. He just added a few hours, but we have a lot more basic questions to ask. Does any of this speak to us bizman hazeh? So, at first glance, the answer should be very clear. It's a pasuk in Chumash. Alechem v'koli v'charmel lo sochlu at etzem hayoyim hazeh ad aviyachem as kabel okechem. Kasa lam the Torah sechem. The Torah couldn't say it more clearly than that. That anything that's bread or other kinds of prepared grains or cereals, lechem kol v'charmel, the Torah Shabbat says, first to any and everything made from the chameshes midei dogon, from wheat, barley, and we assume oats, spelt rye, we'll work with that assumption right now. The chameshes midei dogon that plays such a prominent role in other areas of halacha. That's what the Teshuva Peh explains, that's what the Mishnah Masechet Menachos records. Anything that grew from this year's grain is prohibited until either the Korban Omer passes over it, or if there's no Korban Omer, the second day Pesach, the beginning or the end of the day, whatever the Etzav Yemezah is, until that moment in time occurs, but that grain, those grain products are awesome and derived from the Chiyuv Malchus. That's Amshe Pasuk, the Ferish Pasuk of Chumash. However, maybe our initial reaction was wrong, because maybe we could take almost a very, very easy way out of this entire sugya and say, wait a second, this is an agricultural mitzvah. This is a mitzvah that deals with grain growing in the ground. That's what we call a mitzvah Tzuli Baretz. And we all know the Mishnah in Maseches Kedushin, those who have Maseches Kedushin with them, take a look. So in the first breakfast of Kedushin. With the Mishnah. The Mishnah on Lamed Vav Amid Beis. The very bottom of Lamed Vav Amid Beis. Kol mitzvah shetlui ba'aretz. En ha'agetz ala ba'aretz. Any mitzvah that is ground-oriented, depends on the agriculture, such as trumas, mice, or shmit, etc., only applies in Eretz Yisrael. She'enit le'baretz, tefillin, and Shabbos, and kashrus, the mekes be'baretz be'en chutzlar. That's a dimin atar. There's no question whatsoever that mid'araisa, mitzvahs, and noagos, and chutzlarets, and full force, belishim, suffix whatsoever. There is a fascinating Ramban in the world of machshav and hashkafa. The Ramban, in a few places in Chumash, develops this idea that the Iker Mokka Mitzvah is really an Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is like the Heichal HaMelech. That's like the palace of the king. That's where you really serve the king. The Chiddush that we have to keep Mitzvah Chutz Laaretz, almost like in the world of Machshava, like almost like a Ke'ena HaChon, like a preparation for coming back to the palace of the king. But the Ramban, Bishum Pana Ba'ofen, Chalila V'Chalila, the Ramban never ever meant to say Mitzvah Sorot, the Rabban Chutz Laaretz. It's absolutely absurd. You read the Ramban 100 times over, you'd never ever walk away with even a mashu of that. No question whatsoever that the Ramban held, like everybody holds, like the Mishnah is, like the Gemara is, like everybody held from day one. Of course, mitzvahs are no-goes, of course, it's with the Raisa. Not the agricultural mitzvahs, but regular mitzvahs, are of course, no-goes, but not Torah. I was once giving a shiur, and I was talking about whether someone who's chayav derabbanan can be motzi, someone who's chayav deraisa. So somebody raised their hand and said, according to Ramban, even if you chayav deraisa, it's only derabbanan, because mitzvah chutzah is only derabbanan. So I had to like stop the shiur and like take a 10-minute digression to explain why, in a very, very nice, calm, respectful way, I explained to him why he blew it. That's not at all what the Ramban, any shape or form, meant to say. Anyway, back to the story. So, yeah.
Is really Hadash is a mitzvah shetluya baharetz. It's not like Be'ah Shecha that you do it. It's a tvua. It's luya ba'omer. Ha'omer has nothing to do with the mitzvah itself.
Okay. So hold on for a second. Let's see. We're going to come back to that for a minute. So I'm just trying to almost like throw out svaras now. Like I started out by saying, well, of course Chadash applies. Of course there's a nisa to eat the new grain in Chutz Laretz. Why not? It's a mitzvah in the Torah. Why not? And then I'm backtracking and say, wait a second. Maybe it's a mitzvah tluy baretz. So now you're questioning, well, maybe it's not a mitzvah tluy baretz. So the best place to look is actually a pasuk chumash. Because that same pasuk in Parshas Emor that says, "V'lechev v'koli v'charim lo socha etze be'arev v'chukas olam v'cholder v'sechem," the two last words of the pasuk causes a lot of confusion. V'chol moshvei sechem, wherever you live, v'chol moshvei sechem. What in the world does that mean? V'chol moshvei sechem. So here, there was a major Machlekes HaTanoim that actually appears in the Sugya Maseches Kedushin a little bit further on. A Machlekes HaTanoim, how to say Taich, how to translate just the Pshuta Shabika B'chol Moshvei Sechem. So one Tana said, you know what B'chol Moshvei Sechem means? Wherever you live, wherever the grain grows, whether it grows in Eretz Yisrael, whether it grows in, like back in Europe, back in the Ukraine, whether it grows in Nebraska or Kansas, it doesn't matter where in the world it grows. B'chol moshvei sechem. I give all, but it's a mitzvah tluy baretz. So the answer is, yeah, but the Torah trumps that. The Baruch Hu could keep this as an exception. But this is an exception to the rules of mitzvah tluy baretz. So that's one Tana. And far be it for me to be machriya between Tanoim. But I think that if you didn't know the other Tana exists, this is probably how you would teach up the pasuk. And you'd probably walk away by saying, B'chol moshvei sechem. That's right. That's it. End of discussion. But the Gemara does quote another Tana. The other Tana says, "Chom shvaseichem" refers within Eretz Yisrael. So why the phrase? What's the significance of "chom shvaseichem"? "Chom shvaseichem" means la'ache Yerusha v'yeshiva. It means when you've inhabited Eretz Yisrael. And we know historically when Klai Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael in days of Yeshua ben Nun, they were hanging around for 14 years. Not exactly hanging around doing nothing, but 7 years they were conquering, 7 years they were dividing up the land. And they didn't really get settled into the land. You can't really say people were settled down until 14 years into it. So comes one time and says, B'chol moshvei sechem teaches me that for those first 14 years, you didn't have to worry about the chodesh. Chodesh didn't start. It's not called B'chol moshvei sechem. But once the 14 years are over, then it starts. Where does it start? In Eretz Yisrael, of course, because it's a mitzvah. So everyone agrees that you have to say some pshat in the word B'chol moshvei sechem. What pshat you say, of course, is going to make a tremendous, tremendous difference whether you ultimately conclude that Chadash applies only to grain in Eretz Yisrael, or whether Chadash applies even to grain that grows in Chutz Laretz. How do we pass in halacha on that question? So it's very, very tricky because there are a few Gemaras, actually a few Mishnayos and a few Gemaras, Sugyos and Kiddushin, Sugyos and Menaches, and it's not crystal clear what the answer to that question is. What the final word of the halacha is. So, not a great surprise, since there's no absolute clarity in the Gemara, there's a breakdown to Rishonim, and for sure there's Machlokes Rishonim. But let me present to you just some of the names in the Machlokes, and knowing the information I'm about to tell you, tell me which direction you think the halacha is going to go. The following Rishonim paskin that Chadash is Neig in Chutz Laretz, like the first opinion that we mentioned. B'chol moshvei sechem means literally no matter where you are, the Torah trumps the regular rule of mitzvah tluy baretz. The Rif paskins this way. The Rambam paskins this way. And the Rush paskins this way. Now, in the world of Psak Halacha, that is a very, very strong lineup. A very, very strong team.
It would be Sephardic.
What?
That would be the Sephardim will hold and Ashkenazim will not.
Well, wait. I said the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. The Rosh right. is an Ashkenazi. So,
but he is one of Shlosha Amudim.
That's right. That's right. So let's line up the Rishonim again. You have the Rif Paskins, Chadashis Noigin Chutzlaretz, the Rambam Paskins, and the Rosh Paskins. It's no great surprise that the Shulchan Aruch is going to Paskin that Chadashis Noig in Chutzlaretz, Minat Torah. I would be shocked otherwise, because we are well aware of the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, has this famous klal in terms of Pesach Hamocha. What? How did the Shulchan Aruch almost like weigh Rishonim? How did he line up Rishonim in terms of Pesach Halacha? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us in Sefer B'Siyosei. He gives us an introduction as to how he paskin shailas, and he tells us that pretty much he gave three Rishonim the strongest weight, the most weight in Pesach Halacha. One was the Rif, one was the Ram, one was the Rosh. And says the B'Siyosei, says the Shulchan Aruch, even though they don't always see it eye to eye, Chiram Lahaftas, he's going to follow Rove of those who showed him. So whenever you have two against one, the Beis Yosef himself tells you 99% of the time he's going to pass like a two. If you have three against zero, it doesn't seem to matter what anyone else has to say about the topic. The game's over according to the Shulchan Aruch. That's why the Shulchan Aruch is very, very clear. If you take a look, I sent it on the Maamar Koma, so you sent the picture on the Makaros. So it's a Shulchan Aruch actually in two places. One is, I put the one in your day on the Maamar Koma, so it actually appears in Aruch Chaim as well. At the end of Hilchos Pesach, but the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Chodesh, or one siman in Shulchan Aruch, siman Reish Tzadi Gimel, says the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Beis, Isser HaChodesh Noeg Bein Ba'aretz Bein B'chutz La'aretz. Pretty definitive. Bein Ba'aretz Bein B'chutz La'aretz. Adkan, Devei Shulchan Aruch, and again, not a great surprise. However, to be told, there were Rishonim who disagreed. And the Rishonim who disagreed were some of the great Ashkenazi Rishonim. Some of them, such as the Or Zeruah, who's a great, great Ashkenazi Rishon from the end of the period of the Baalei HaTosfos, Rabbeinu Baruch, Mechaber Sefer Truma, one of the Talmidim Chachamim of the Ri. So some of the Gedolei Rishonim from the period of Baalei HaTosfos actually disagreed and said, no, we paskin that B'chumash Rosechem doesn't mean what you thought it meant. B'chumash Rosechem means in Eretz Yisrael. Now, in the world of the Shulchan Aruch, that dissenting view didn't even make it to the page, because he already was Nimru Vagam, he was ready Machoriah, 3-0. However, to be honest, intellectually honest, the Wargid daily Rishonim would disagree. A few great Rishonim, Zeruah ben Baruch, perhaps several others, who disagreed as well. But to make matters almost a little bit more complicated, is that even that opinion in the Gemara that these Rishonim are subscribing to, who maintain that B'chomosh Rosechem doesn't refer to Chutz La'aretz, the Gemara has the following statement. According to that Tana, that there's no Chodesh in Chutz La'aretz bin HaTorah, Midrabbanan there is. Oh, yeah, Midrabbanan there is. So the game's over. So what are we wasting time trying to figure out whether we paskin is Chodesh in Chutz La'aretz or Chutz La'aretz Chutz La'aretz? Either there is Midrabbanan. We are observant Jews, so we hope Mitzvah to read the Megillah. Megillah is also Mitzvah Midrabbanan. We eat matzah, which is their ice, and we read the Megillah. We put on tefillin and we wash the Tzidayim. So we do their ice and their abonins, same excitement. Try. So what's the difference? Now, halacha l'maaseh, you pass it. It's an important theoretical machlok. It's not to say, pshat in the pasuk chumash. Will we give the guy malchus or not? Interesting enough, community. But practically speaking for us, whether the grain grows in Kansas and Nebraska, of course, chodesh is now you got it. What's the difference? Either their ice, like one group of Rishonim, or at least chodesh their abonin, like the other. Rishonim. So here, the second group of Rishonim, the Mekilim, go one step further. And they say as follows. What does that mean that Chodesh is doing Midrabbanan Chutz La'aretz? If you really believe that it's a Mitzvah Tluy Baretz, if you believe that the phrase B'chomosh Rosechem doesn't change the fact that it's a Mitzvah Tluy Baretz, so whoever heard of Mitzvah Tluy Baretz, do you know it goes Midrabbanan? But we separate Trumas and Maishas in New York. I mean, it grows in Eretz Yisrael that we do, but something that grows in my backyard, I don't separate the business license. Shemitah is coming up in a few months, but New Jersey, I can't mow my lawn, but all of a sudden Shemitah applies in New Jersey, I've never heard of such a thing. So come a whole group of Rishonim, this is already a Tosis in the beginning of Maseches Chulin that says that Mitzvah Tluyos Baretz, min HaTorah for sure only apply in Eretz Yisrael, but Midrabbanan and Chazal extended them in what's called in Allah, a new category Tosis develops the whole Yisoid Chulin, but Aratzas HaSmuchos. those lands that are geographically very, very close to Eretz Yisrael. And it makes a lot of sense. If you're not going to observe the mitzvah of Tlis Baris, let's say the Marshall Egypt or other very, very close areas, then the next thing you know is you're going to stop observing an Eretz Yisrael also. So with the Rabbanan, they created a din of mitzvah Tlis Baris in Chutz La'aretz, but not in Kansas and in the Ukraine. Not up in the prairies of Canada. They were misaken Trumas and Maisas with the Rabbanon, and perhaps Shemitah with the Rabbanon, and Chodesh with the Rabbanon, even in the Eretz HaSmuchos. And therefore, the Rishonim explained, it makes a lot of sense, because the Amoraim and Babel observe Chodesh. We know this. The Gemara speaks about Amoraim will observe Chodesh. Why are they observing Chodesh? So if you hold that Chodesh and Chutz La'aretz is their Reis, I understand that. And even if you hold Chodesh and Chutz La'aretz is their Rabbanon, Babel apparently was close enough to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe that's enough of an Eretz HaSmuchos. But Europe, the Jews who lived in France and in Spain and North Africa and past Egypt and in America and in Ukraine and in Canada, Australia, come on. There's no Chodesh, Namidirabonim, zero. Now we have an important Machlokes Rishon. Now it's a very, very important Machlokes. Because if you hold that Chodesh is knowing with the rice and Chutz La'aretz, and there's not an iota of difference between grain growing in Eretz Yisrael, in Bavel, or in Kansas. If you hold that Chodesh is knowing with the rice, if you translate the phrase B'chom Shoseichem to mean B'chol Mokom Shatam Yeshvin, Bein Baretz, Bein Chutz La'aretz, then Chodesh is in full force with the rice, B'chol Taikef and Chutz La'aretz, Chay Malkas V'Irit. If you take the other approach, and Chodosh Midaraisas only applies in Eretz Yisrael. The Chomosh Roseicha means the Achei Rishu Vishiv. It doesn't refer to Chutz La'aretz. But the Rabbanon, they're Mesakin in Chutz La'aretz, but that's only in the very, very limited scope of Chutz La'aretz. Eretz HaSmuchos, which would basically be meaningless for us. Now we're back to square one. Now what's the point of Machlokes? How do we, with the capital W, how do we Paskin L'Halacha? So we just said, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins unequivocally, what he does, no question whatsoever. However, came a group of later Paskin and said, you know, we're looking around and very, very from people, people who are Shemitah and Mitzvahs, Mamash, people who are Daktik and everything in Halacha. They're going to the marketplace, they're buying grain, they're buying bread, they're buying cake, they're buying cereal, and bites Babbitz Avtsev. Nobody knows a Chodesh. Tell your average balabos in Europe in the 1600s, Gavold, how could you go eat that bread? It's the Chodesh. He won't even know what you're talking about. He doesn't even punch his thought on the radar screen. Open up a post in Chumash. He said, that's laying for second day pay. What does that have to do with my bread that I'm eating and buying in Krakow? He never heard of it. How did that happen exactly? The Rif, the Ramadur, all the Gdele Mishan Paskin, it's a this and the right. So what happened? So the Taz explains to you. I'll tell you what happens with the Taz. Taz explains as follows. He says, you're right, that it's a machlekes Tanoim, and you're right, it's a machlekes Rishonim, and you're right, that the three major pillars of Psak Halacha, Paskin L'Chumra, but the war Gedol Yerushalmi disagree. I can't argue with that. There was a Ruah, there had been a Baruch, I'm sure there were others who held that we Paskin the other way. I'm going to pass him like the meal to be shining against the Rif Ram and the Rosh. How's that going to happen? There's a Taz based on the Gemara Maseches Nida. State Maseches Nida. We spoke about this Gemara back. I think it was in the summertime, if I'm not mistaken. We're talking about Dalin Minim B'Shas Al-Chak. Remember that the Gemara quotes the possibility of using a lulav that's basically puzzle, but B'Shas Al-Chak, maybe it's okay. You could rely on certain shitas b'shas al-chak. At the time we quoted in the famous Gemara Maseches Nida, the Gemara says, tells a story about there was a big machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and everybody else about a certain detail of Hilchos Tumah B'Tahara, very, very intricate detail of Hilchos Tumah B'Tahara. Rabbi Eliezer was a Mekel and the Rabbanu were Machmir. And one time it happened that there was a famine and there was very, 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 you know, not so much food. And the last thing that Tanaim wanted that the food it was around to become Tomei, because if it becomes Tomei, so first of all, it's Truma, and then you have to dispose of it. It's going to cause a lot of problems. They were trying to save every piece of bread, and never some of the food became Tomei, at least according to the view of the Rabbanan, but not according to Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who said, Kedai hu Rabbi Eliezer l'smeich l'b'shas adcha. even though we don't really follow Rabbi Eliezer because he was outvoted, but Rabbi Tanoim didn't subscribe to that. But there's no food, we're hungry, it's hard to get, hard to eat. And Kedaihu Rabbi Eliezer smachu b'shasamcha. That can't be a Gemara Maseches. So the Gemara itself doesn't stop. I stop, but the Gemara doesn't stop. The Gemara then goes to qualify this. The Gemara says, wait a second, what happened here? Was there a formal vote in the Sanhedrin, in the Beis HaGadol, to outvote Rabbi Eliezer? If there was, then even Mishas HaChach, you can't follow Rabbi Eliezer. His shita is nifcha min halacha. Al Korchach, it was never put up to vote. Al Korchach, it was never nimnu v'gomel, it was never an official formal kviyas halacha neged Rabbi Eliezer. It was understood that Allah is not like Rabbi Eliezer because he was the minority view, Yechabram L'charadim. But it was never really put up to the test of an under the minion. It was never a psak beizdin against Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, Kedai Rabbi Eliezer spoke of Shasarcha. So the Gemara in Nida has really two Gemara Kedush, two very, very important klon and psak aloha. One is the Gemara introduces us this idea of Shasarcha, Kedai who plunged the smach of Shasarcha. And number two, the Gemara puts the brakes on it by saying it only applies if there was not a nimnu v'gomel again. Comes the Taz and quotes this Gemara Maseches Nida and says that's what's playing out in Jewish people in Eastern Europe for hundreds and thousands of years. No food. We know. Anyone tell you stories about Eastern Europe back in the 1920s that there was no food? Back in the 1620s, there was zikha no food. The posh was no food. They're going to start to be makbir chodesh. You can't eat grain for 8 months a year. As it is, no one had anything to eat. So, ein chashasachak golem is there. Kedai who zaktitas, kedai who the orzaru and the Rabbeinu Baruch, kedai that sheet is hamakilim, the smaych alayim b'shasachak, as the Gemara says in Maseches Nida. It was never nimnu v'gomru, there was never an official vote. Apparently the Taz didn't take the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch as being an official vote. The Taz only lived a couple of years after the Shulchan Aruch. So I don't think the Taz viewed the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch as an under the minion. It wasn't a Pesach based in. It was the Shulchan Aruch's personal preference to pass it against the Rabbeinu Baruch and against the Azarua, but it wasn't an under the minion of a Beis HaGadol. And therefore says the Taz, Kedai you pliny, Kedai we shine him elu, smaych alayim b'shasachak. They're stating Taz. That was the Taz's rationale for what's been going on until that very day. Comes the Shach, it is klolim b'psak halacha. Back in Uchus Tam HaTorah, the Shach has a whole series of klolim as relates to Hanhogis of Issa v'Heter, b'psak halacha. The Shach says he thinks that the Taz's application of that Gemara was a misapplication of the Gemara. Says the Shach, I challenge you, go back to the Gemara Nida, read that Gemara and see what it's talking about. The Gemara there is talking about, yes, it's a machlekes of Elazar and the Rabbanan. But it was talking about a tumah derabanan, a very, very detailed technicality of tumas meis liyeis, a chumah derabanan, a kodshim, a tumah meiselach. Says the Shach, by dinam derabanan, you want to be making like the yochim b'shasachak, gezuntay. You know why? By dinam derabanan, heim al reim amru. The chacham were the ones who made the din derabanan, the chacham built into the system. If you have a shasachak, you rely on the das yochim. By dinam deraisa, says the Shach. Vishtate by dinam deraisa, you have a right to be making b'shasachak. Who ever heard of such a thing? By dinim derais, you got to follow the rules. What are the rules? Says the Shach, I'll tell you the rules. Achrei rabim lahatas. You follow the majority. So state in the Chumash. We have three dayonim, two dayonim say chayiv. One says pot, you follow chayiv. Bein bedinim amnes, bein bedinim nefashas. The only thing, by dinim nefashas, you need more than a rove of one. You need 13 to that. But that's a quirk of dinim nefashas. The basic rule is you follow rov. Says the Shach. If the Torah Kedaisha Bash Mishpatim Shrayin Chai V'Kayim Acharam Lahatis, under the trumpet it says in the Torah, say, no, well, it's a Shas HaChach, and if I can rely on the Miut, no. That klal of relying on the Miut, the Mokom HaRoiv, the Shas HaChach, is limited to Dinam Durabban, and Chazal built into the system, Chazal made this, they can do whatever they want. They can let you circumvent this, Dinam Duraisa, it's a Dinam Duraisa, you're stuck, you're finished. Therefore, the Shach argues, the Taz is Libetzchus, the Klaisol is Nishk Libetzchus. If that's what the Jewish people have been relying on for the last 1,000 years, Lochan Veis is the Shach. Maybe there's another Kula, but this is not it, says the Shach. How would the Taz respond back to the critique of the Shach? Chor, the Shach's ready as a possible from the Shach Ram Lahatis. So apparently the Taz's understanding was, the Parashavach Ram Lahatis means when you have a Moshe Veis there, when you have Rabbanim and Dayanim talking to each other, you have three dayanim sitting around the table. Two of them are saying chai, one saying pot, they're fighting, arguing, and Rai is back, and finally the Amdul Minyan does Achrayim Lahatis. The fact that there's One Rishon sitting in Egypt, the Rambam sitting in Egypt writing a sefer. The Rosh is sitting in Germany writing a sefer. The Rif is sitting in Morocco writing a sefer. And Rabbeinu Baruch sitting in France writing a sefer. And the Arzaru sitting in Vienna writing a sefer. And now we add up all the, we do the tally. Oh, by golly, it's 3-2. That's not Harab Chatos. That's not the Din HaTorah following a rave of a Beis Din. There's no parish of Harab Chatos in that. So then, you follow the mute. Even if I dare ISIS, that's the Taz response when we back to Shach. It's a fascinating machlokes, a very long, fascinating machlokes. The Taz the Shach, how to understand the parameters and limitations of that Gemara Masech is neither. But it's not just the academic machlokes, that you know, make or break the heter of Chodesh B'zmanuzer. So according to the Taz, Gans Kleisos were long under Das Yochid, because Kedai Kloid was Mechel Mishasadcha. The Shach says, Lohid from there. We have two issues, Rabbi Say. If you want to go down the route of the Taz, I'll leave it to Chos B'zman Hazeh. So, number one, the Shach is adamantly opposed to it. And number two, the Taz never quite said that it's, you know, Mahadrim and Mahadrim over here. What the Taz says is, what do you do? You're starved. You're starving. Lays bread, what are you going to do? The boys say, there is no suffix whatsoever. Many of the people today who are makbid on Yashan, the Moni Chadash, none of them are starving. Trust me, nobody is starving. We've reached a point in Tinek, we've reached this point about 15 years ago, you cannot find non-Yashan bakery in Tinek. It doesn't exist, to the best of my knowledge. Anywhere you're going to buy challahs in Tinek, it's going to be Yashan. No one's dying, no one's starving this month. So to invoke the parasha, the sugya of saying it's a shas of chak today, it's a big chak to call it a shas of chak. It's a low pashut to call it a shas of chak today. It's very, very hard to believe that. Maybe 50 years ago it was a shas of chak, not today. Yeah.
So based on what the shach said, really we should not have any problem. Everybody will go based on Vekamta Ve'alita Lamakom, Bedin Shekayam. If it's in Morocco, then it's Morocco. They'll do what they're at Bedin, because since everybody is doing someplace else. In France, they'll do whatever they're at the Atra, the Mara de Atra.
That's exactly what the Rambam says. The Rambam is like, Dabba de Pesha Mishnah says, that's exactly what happens today. We don't have the base on Golden Mishalayim. That's exactly what happens. The Jews in Morocco asked the Rabbanim in Morocco, and the Jews in France asked the Jews in France, and the Jews in Poland asked the Rabbanim in Poland. That's what happened. The problem is that when we did all the tallying up, so we realized that most of the Rabbanim said it was also, most of the Rishonim said it was also. That's the problem. Oh. So we can keep this in the back of my minds, but you know, we have to be a little bit weary whether we want to go down that route of Shasat Chak as the route that we want to take. So is there something else we can come up with? Almost like another eight that we could possibly come up with to almost mitigate this a little bit. Somebody asked a question before. Somebody sent me a question. It was an issue of Pikuach Nefesh. In Europe, maybe. 500 years ago. In America today, not only is it not Pikuach Nefesh, you'll save a few pounds. a little less carbohydrates these days. So I wouldn't call Pikuach Nefesh today. Maybe in Europe it was Pikuach Nefesh. Possibly. Possible.
Wait.
So, no, but so let's go back to the Shulchan Aruch, back to that Mechaber in Simon Reish Tzadik Gimel, Siv Beis. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Yisrael Chodesh Noig Bein Baruch Bein Chutzot, Bein B'Shal Yisrael, Bein B'Shal Odi Kichon. So the Shulchan Aruch goes out of his way to tell you that Chodesh applies no matter who's growing the grain. It doesn't make the slightest bit of difference if it's a Jewish farmer or a Goyish farmer. But the fact that the Shulchan Aruch had to go out of his way to tell that to you, that already indicates that somebody said fakir, somebody said the opposite. And there was a view in Rishonim that said the opposite, that said, yes, Chodesh applies to Chutzlar. It's 100% to Jewish-owned grain, not to non-Jewish owned grain. So if you take a look at the Taz on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, Sifkot and Beis, Kein Kasku HaPoiskim B'Feirish, says the Taz, All the poskim say this, but not really Allah. Umari v'chami zal kosav. Who is the Mari v'chami? Who is the father-in-law of the Taz, the Bach? One of the great G'dayle, G'dayle Olam, from the period of the Beis Yosef. And he wrote that when the Beis Yosef wrote his running commentary on the Torah, so the Bach wrote his running commentary on the Torah. So on the Torah, we have printed as the Beis Yosef on one side, the Bach on the other side. So he was the father-in-law, besides being a Goyin Sheba Goyin, a Golo Sheba Dor, in his own right, Yos Sirkish was his name. He was the father-in-law of the Taz. He's buried in the Krakow Cemetery, the same cemetery as the Ramah. So you can go to his cavern today. So the Bach, Mary B'chamiz Abkhasa, Sheshachach Abrurad B'shalav G'chamin Anei Chodesh. Bach had a whole complicated raya from the first breakfast section of Shoshana that it doesn't apply to Goyish crop. Finish, end of discussion. That's it.
No, so maybe is the mahloket here between the Bach and Bet Yosef, if that's mitzvah loya baretz or no?
No, well, it's that again. We're working with the assumption that it applies in chutz laretz. So we're working with the assumption that it's not governed by the regular rules of mitzvah baretz. The afal pichein, the Bach is claiming that if it's not called ktirchem, based on the sugya of Rosh Hashanah, it's not tzkotzah shel Yisrael. If it's not owned by a Jewish farmer, then there's no issur chadash at all. So this would be a phenomenal kula, unbelievable kula. And here, we don't have a Gemara. The Bach claims it's a Gemara about it, but we don't have Machlokes HaTanaim. We don't have explicit Rishonim as much. If you're willing to go down that route, it would be an amazing kula. It would be Gavalika kula. However, there's a huge however. Huge, however, is that it would appear that most of the poskim thought this was not correct. There's Yerushalmi that seems to contradict this, and Rubin, the later poskim, didn't seem to go down this route. That just to say it's a goyish tvua, and therefore it's good to go, not at all clear. So there's a Bir HaGra. I can find this, hold on. We take a look at the Bir HaGra, and we're able to see it in the printout on the phone, but it's the Bir HaGra and Sifkat and Beis. It's Beis in the Bir HaGra. So look at this Lashon of the Gra. It's a very, very, very strong Lashon. It's the second wide line in the Bir HaGra. First word line is Toz Gobelhu. Vagama Shakos Mashem Bach. A Bach Kashitos of the Svirle, Eno Noeg Mishal of the Kichavim. The Bach was the one who supported this idea, and he didn't make it up. There were Rishonim before him who said it. And he's the one who bought into this idea that it doesn't apply to Goyish Tvuah. Ukrahiku al Kakadai Kol Acharonim. A very strong ballad. Literally means hit on the head. Does everybody else hit him over the head and say, no, it can't be. You can't say such a thing. It's not true. It was a mistake. The Heilige Bach made a mistake. So Shtei didn't grow. I'm not going to say the Bach made a mistake, but the Grof said it. The Imamish made a mistake. V'tova havalei leber hagoyla kan hashtika. The Bir HaGola writes the notes on the side of Shulchan Aruch, the source of the Shulchan Aruch, quoted the Bach, was a big, big supporter of the Bach. So the Bir HaGola quotes this Bach. So the Vilna Gaon says about this Bir HaGola, it's better he shouldn't have said it. Tov lo ha'isa elo hashtika. White, strong, Lashon. It's an even more strong notion if you knew who the Bir HaGola was. He was related to the Grub. I think it was like his great-grandfather or something. And his mother's son, I don't remember exactly how they were related, but he was like Elta Zeta of the Vilna Gaon. So I don't think the Vilna Gaon saw him. Vilna Gaon is saying, Elta Zeta, he's a heilige Talmud Chacham, the Bach is an Adam Golan Noi. It's a partial mistake. Great people sometimes make mistakes. It's a mistake for the Grub. I'm not going to say it for the Grub, said. Others claimed it wasn't a mistake. Others were not so sure it was a mistake. Others got rayas. Some Rishonim said it even. Others claimed it wasn't a mistake. So we have already the beginnings of two potential halachic kulas, two potential shitas, to give a little bit of a background, a little bit of almost like a reference point as to what's been going on in Europe for the last 800 years or so, before the Holocaust, 800 years or so, that we know of. In the Ashkenazi community, there seems to have been a very, 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 very lax attitude towards the Issur Chodesh that basically didn't exist. Why didn't it exist? So one approach was taken by the Taz, based on the minority view of Rishon that doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz, and finished the end of discussion. And the other approach was taken by the Bach, and some preceded him, some followed him, doesn't apply to Goyish Tfu, and that's the end of discussion. There are very, very few Jewish farmers who are growing wheat these days, and the bulk of the farms in Kansas and Nebraska are Goyish owned farms, to the best of my knowledge. So if either one of these two approaches are correct, then the game's over. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah, each one is fraught with opposition, fraught with controversy, but these were the two, almost like two of the traditional approaches for quite some time. And either one of them, in combination of the two of them, would explain why you find a Nashi G'dayilim v'chacham, great v'chacham, great tzaddik, great g'dayilim. V'maisi, we're not ma'akbarim chadash. That's honestly, we're not ma'akbarim chadash. Then there's a third approach to the sugya, and that's the approach that the Ramah takes. The Ramah's also looking around. He's living in Krakow, same time as the Bach. He's living in the 1500s. He's looking around and he sees that Lemaisa, the Hamon Haman, are not being Machber in Chodesh. Most people are going to the marketplace in Krakow buying grain, buying bread, buying cake, and cereals in Pittsburgh. No one's checking dates on the Chodesh.com website to see whether the cereal is Yosher or not. Lemaisa, the other in Eastern Europe, they're buying things right now. Nobody cares. So what's going on? So the Ramah, in his heart of hearts, thinks the Rift around with Russia right. Ramah, in his heart of hearts, thinks the Bach is not right. And now the Ramah is really difficult because what's going on? How do you explain the Krakow marketplace if you don't accept those two coups, which get each one of them more highly controversial? So come to Ramah with the following. Come to Ramah, and Simon Reish said, give a fascinating Ramah. Says Ramah in Reish Tzadi Gimel Sif Gimel. When we come back home, says the Ramah, Kol Stam Tvu Ashar Yachar Pesach. Any grain that you want to go into any marketplace and crack and buy anytime after Pesach. So from April till the following April, you could do it. You know why? How in the world do you know which year this grain came from? You know what's mutter because Sveik Sveika. Says the Ramah, it's famous fake, a double doubt. I'm going into the store in November and I'm buying a loaf of bread. I don't have a date printed. I have no idea. When did this grain grow? Maybe the grain grew from last year's grain, from before Pesach's grain. Anything that grew from last year, once last Omer, it's Ois Chodesh now, it's called Yoshon, the opposite of Chodesh. How do you know? Any given bowl of cereal, any given slice of cake, any given cookie, any given piece of bread is only a suffix. One suffix is not enough. We're dealing with deraisas here. It's a double down. And here the Ramah gets very, very, very tricky. Says the Ramah, what's the sveik sveika? Suffix yimishana sha'avra. Maybe it's last year's grain. V'yimtem tzalei mishana zu. Even if it's this year's grain. V'komokom duma nishra sha'karim ha'imeh. Maybe this grain already took root before the Korban Omer, before the second day Pesach. It happens to be a din, the Mishnah says in Menachos. Let's say I planted grain this year, like 2 weeks before Pesach. Let's say a month before Pesach, I planted grain in March. And now Pesach comes, is that last year's grain or this year's grain? The Mishnah says very simple. If the grain already took root before that magic moment of Korban Omer or second day Pesach, whatever the magic moment is, if the grain already took root, even though it's nowhere near harvest, it's not going to be harvested for another 6 months. Any grain that has already taken root when the Omer comes around, that's covered by the Omer, and that becomes now Yashon. So it says the Ramah, very simple. I'm walking into a bakery in Krakow in November, and I want a loaf of bread. It could be this grain came from last year's grain from 20 years ago. I don't know where it came from. And even if it came from this season's grain, it's very possible that this grain was already planted enough time to take root before the Korban Omer. Therefore, by definition, it's mutter. Those are sveik sveik, a famous sveik sveik in the Rambam. Maybe last year, maybe this year, maybe it's still okay because maybe it's written nishash kedem ha'ayimah. The Rambam continues, he says. Those kinds of grains, shazor and vadel yachar, there's a typo here. It should say Pesach with a samach, not with a tov. Pesach Hashem la Pesach. That's what's there with the tov. So those kinds of tvua, shazor and vadel yachar Pesach, some grains we know for a fact were planted after Pesach. You go with mitzvah medina shazor and shibol shul b'sor yachar Pesach, barley, oats, az yesh lo lahachmir achar kotzir. Unless maybe it's coming from another place, because your whole robes and everything. And then the Rambam starts talking about the whole story about when did the goyim planting? Are they planting early? Are they planting late? The Gersha farms. It's critical for us to know now, says the Rambam, when the planting season is. Because if you're going down the route of, well, it's chutz la'aretz, everything's okay, I couldn't care less with the goyim planting. If you're going down the route of it's goyish tefuah, I couldn't care less with the goyim planting. If you're going down the route that neither of those two kulas are really valid, and the real kulas because of sveik sveik is, then you better make sure you have your numbers right. Your statistics better be working for you. And part of what creates a sveik sveik was when is the planting season? That's critical because the planting season, after Pesach, you just lost one of your sveikas, just fell by the wayside. So you better know exactly when they're planting. How am I going to know when the goyim planting? I go on the field. Huh? What's making the goyim plant early or late? There are two factors. If you look in the early apostles, Tripus Hadash and others, Tripus Harosh, there are two factors that will determine when the Goyisha farmer in Poland, in the Ukraine, is going to plant his wheat. One is, very simple, how much snow it is. How cold is it this season?
Weather.
Weather is a critical factor. And you won't believe the other factor, but it's normally I wouldn't talk about such a thing in the Shia, but it's part of Torah, Yom HaNitzarech. It depends when, catch this one, when Lent begins. What's this Lent? What's Lent? Lent is the time where the Goyim, and the several weeks before their holiday in the springtime, where they have all the different, we know it from where they know alternate side of the street parking from. When there's a special Wednesday, and then there's a special Thursday, and there's a special Friday, another day. Every part of that whole season of Lent, which are very sad, I mean, for the real religious, the real hardcore religious, world. So those are very, that's a sad season. It corresponds to things in their religion that are very sad. What does that have to do with me and Chodesh? Everything. Because the real religious farmers back in Poland, when people were really religious back in the 1300s, they didn't plant during Lent. So depending on how early Lent was of that given year is going to determine when the planting season was. The later it is, the worse it is for us. We want it to be early as possible. That's why if you look into Poskim, the Poskim discuss, they call it Yemei Ha'inoy Shelahem. Inoy? Like tiny. The days of their afflictions because the religious Goyim in those days would do all kind of things. They didn't eat meat, and they didn't do this, and they didn't do work. All kind of different chumras and things that they did as demonstrations of their days of mourning. That's called the Yemei Inur Shalehem. That's what the Rishonim called the Yemei Inur Shalehem. The Taz quotes. If you take a look at the Taz and Sifkot and Gimel. So the Taz says the Tor Kos of Zesh Yemei Inur of the Chomai Bezman Pesach. Perish for ain of the noigan of the chum also is man lachvash toche be imish lehem. The oak doesn't dam shas a grid hoy a fish back as chere for kerachais oretz. Kosha uskur me lachvash ba. So either it was the ground was still too much frost on the ground. It couldn't till the soil. So they had to delay the planting. Or because the imish lehem made it. So those factors are going to impact on our chodesh. So again, the Ramah is going talking a different language than we were talking until now. Up until now, we were talking pure halacha. If you really believe one of the two kulas that we mentioned, either because it's chutz la'aretz or it's goyish or tefuah, then the game's over. If you go down the route of the Ramah of Sfeik Sfeikis, then you better interpret the Sfeik Sfeikis on. It's obvious that if you're going down the route of the Ramah of Sfeik Sfeikis, those are going to change according to time and place. I don't know if you multi-laws on the farmers out in Nebraska and Wyoming, Nebraska and Kansas today. I don't know whether you may Inush Alehem is the number one factor. There's only one factor that determines the planting season today is money. When am I going to be able to get the most money for the least amount of expenses? So things have changed drastically as much as that.
Maybe.
Now, the planting season does change depending on whether it does still play a role, whether we haven't controlled yet. Weather still plays a role, but some of the other things that control the Middle Ages don't necessarily play out. Yeah, exactly.
It's very funny. I actually had a discussion about this topic with Aaron Soloveitchik in 1969.
I can tell you already what Rav Aaron said, but I want to hear what you said he said.
What he said to me was that we were talking not about what the halacha is, because the Soloveitchiks were very machpid on it. And I was asking him what was going on. And he said that in the United States, the reason almost in 69, you didn't have bakeries which said we use only Yashan. You rarely saw that. And he said that they had two types of wheat in the United States, winter wheat, Durum wheat, and spring wheat. Spring wheat, which was like up until the 70s, was about 90% of the wheat which was grown, was planted primarily in November and early December. And maybe in March they started planting it. So none of it would have been Yashan. None of it would have been Chadash. And in addition, in the 50s, they had huge wheat surpluses. So the probability of getting this year's wheat, if it had been planted late, which a very tiny amount had been planted, I'm quoting him, by the way, to the best of my memory. I didn't speak to him a year ago, as I said, 68 or 69. So the point is that it was very unlikely that you'd have anything. However, he said, one of the problems which was then starting one of the trends which was starting to take place was the growth of winter wheat, which is planted in the late spring or in the summer. It's called winter wheat because it's harvested in the winter. And there was a increasing amount of that type of wheat which was planted. So he said it was going to be a much more important inyan as the years went on. So that's, as I said, to the best of my memory, and as I said, this is from 52, 53 years ago, that's what he said to me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to reiterate what I said before, that 1,000% correct in the year 1969.
Yeah,
but the same way that things changed from 1569 to 1969, things have changed from 1969 to 2021. So 100%, you couldn't have said it better, that if you want to go down to discuss the sugya through the eyes of the Ramah, then you have to sit down and figure out what are the facts on the ground. When is planting taking place? What kind of wheat are they using? The winter wheat and the spring wheat, all that, 100%. So hopefully, Mitzvah Shem, next week, we're going to continue with this Ramah, because the Ramah is a loaded statement on twofold. First of all, we almost let the Ramah get away with calling this a Sfeik Sfeika. There's a huge halachic problem with the Ramah's formulation of calling this a Sfeik Sfeika, number one. And then number two, if we're going to go down the root of the Ramah, then we have to really, really hopefully figure out what are the facts now, to the best of our knowledge. So in the year 2021, in terms of planting season, in terms of spring wheat and winter wheat, and surpluses and that kind of stuff, so there's a lot of metzias that has to be determined. The good news today, which has made things significantly easier, Bizman Hazer, is that everything, the way the world that we live in today, is everything is traceable, very, very simple. It means back in 1969, it was almost impossible to know anything. It means I had a box of cereal in front of me. I don't have a clue where and when, which wheat the cereal came from. But in 2021, I can look at a box of cereal, I'll tell you in a second, whether it's a concern of Chodesh Yashin. I just simply take one look at the date on it, and I simply press, go online to yashin.com, and they'll tell you exactly any single product you want that's produced in the entire world, they'll say exactly, is there even a concern, even a chashash of chadash today? Because everything is so easily traced and tracked with manazeh because of technology. So the internet, believe it or not, one of the advantages of the internet, I don't know how many there are, but at least one of them, is that it's made yashan easier to observe because everything is so much easily trackable today. Hopefully, B'tshem, next week, I want to really continue from the halachic point of view as to the parameters of this fake, and then just because it's a fascinating topic, reminds us just see how some of this plays out for us to give us two comments that flesh out the sugya of chadash b'zman hazeh. Yeah, sorry, question.
Did the Rama change his opinion from year to year based on the facts?
The Rama at the very end, I stopped showing the Rama. The Rama writes at the very end that he thinks that if you really believe that there's chadash out there, you really shouldn't be eating it. But he writes, "What if you shagin?" He says, "Don't drive people crazy. People are relying on the other coolers." The Rama in his heart of hearts sounds like he's only willing to really, really make it out right if it's a real snake speaker. And therefore, he writes, it's going to change, and that's why he had it in against the oats and against the barley. He was okay with the wheat because things were changing every year. So,
it's hard for people to follow that.
What?
It's hard for people to follow that from year to year.
Right. Also, it's different things. Like, you have to be more mocked about, even in America today, you mentioned this, and we'll talk about that much more next week. You mentioned Dr. Melman was 100% correct. Everything Ravine was talking about was about wheat, but oats is a different story, Lagamri. The oats in America actually probably are the most chadash problem of everything, because the oats generally are grown at a time when there would be more of a concern of chadash. So you have a strange thing that the odds of having chadash in your Cheerios are more likely than having chadash in your bread. It's very possible. So
were the other mitzvot atzilus baritz, did they begin immediately or did they also begin later on?
Oh, so both of them also started later on. They also started l'achar Yerusha v'yeshiva. Yeah.
So then, Mekumas Mosechem is not such a chiddush about
Kaddish. Right.
Rabbi, can I ask something about something we learned last Saturday?